Hello and welcome to today's episode of Stories from the Pack, brought to you by Wolves Fancast. Richard Hobbs here, and joining me today, I am joined by Tom Roberts. Tom, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. I mean, things are starting to lift restriction-wise, and it's, and despite it pouring down with rain the last couple of days, it's starting to get sunny again, so I'm borderline optimistic at the moment, which, despite the... It's an interesting contrast to how Wolves are doing at the moment and how I feel about Wolves. But I get we'll kind of touch on Wolves' current plight at the towards the end of the show. But for us, Stories from the Pack, if you've not listened before, essentially we like to interview Wolves fans on their time supporting the club, where it's taken them, interesting facets that have come out from that, what it means to be a Wolves fan. And essentially the journey that supporting a club like Wolves can take you. When I was chatting to Tom before before the recording, I mentioned to him he's had a far more interesting life than I have. And hopefully we'll kind of delve a little bit deeper onto this. I'm sure Tom will sort of disagree with that. But we'll go right back to the start in terms of supporting Wolves. When was it for you? Was it very much a from birth situation for yourself, or and passed down the line, or was it a bit more location wise? How did you sort of very much come to supporting Wolves?
I think like most people, it's certainly it's a hereditary thing, certainly something that we sort of gained from previous generations. Although my granddad was actually a Villa fan, so him and my dad grew up in Cannock, which I know is sort of a it's a very heavy Wolves-centric area. So my dad grew up in Cannock originally, and then used to get the bus to in the 80s, sort of early 70s to go and watch the Wolves, sort of the era of Frank Munro, you know, the Duke and Kenny Hibbert and all that. So it's kind of just passed down to us. When I was younger, we sort of went more sporadically, and then and we just went as often as we could. And I think one of my early memories is I think we played against... I'm not sure who it was now, probably Notts Forest. Probably should have done my research before this. But I know that we won 3-1, and I was sort of about 5 or 6. And it's kind of a running theme with my family that I used to call Bully Billy. So it was actually my 30th last year, and my brother included that as one of the quiz questions.
So you mentioned your first game you think was against Notts Forest. That brings up an interesting theme for me when I've done these. So I've done, I think this is the 9th one or so, and kind of going off my own history as well. It's always... apart from a few fans in the early 90s who went to games against Italian clubs for the Anglo-Italian Club Cup, it always seems to be very provincial teams, and Notts Forest hits that chord perfectly. I think mine was Tranmere. I've had other people who was Stockport, Preston. I don't think I've asked any Wolves fan to go, yeah, my first game was against Spurs. Just doesn't
happen. I mean, you probably have a croc coming through, sort of who in their early teens. I imagine their bad years were when Wolves finished 12th in 2021.
Yeah, the terrible times for them. But going back for yourself, so you sort of went to games sort of sporadically. I think a lot of people seem to have done that if it wasn't sort of almost a complete, you know, live and die passion by a family. It was almost just came along organically, I guess. Did you sort of move on to then getting a season ticket at a relatively young age, or how long do you sort of continue kind of just, I guess, going regularly but not all the time?
So I think it was sort of around 2001. I had to check this with my dad in the last few days, because I was always adamant that it was the 2003, the playoff final, that was sort of the catalyst for us, but he's absolutely adamant that no, we were before that mad rush. So I think it was around 2001 that myself, my brother and my dad got a season ticket. And obviously in those days, it was 3 o'clock Saturday afternoon. And I always remember being slightly frantic, because I'd have football training in the morning and then be rushing around, getting ready, get showered. And then we'd pick my brother up, who'd be doing a shift at WH Smith, and he'd be getting changed in the car on the way. And it'd be this sort of mad, frantic rush to get there. And then we'd just sit there for 2 hours watching Oliver Vignana do keepy-ups in the warm-up. So it was always there.
Again, you struck upon something which I always find fascinating. As I mentioned earlier, I think you're sort of only a couple of years older than me. Getting to games early. Now, I needed to get there at least an hour before kickoff. Were you of a similar vein? Because
Did
you grow up sort of do you say Cannock?
Well, so we grew up in Stafford. Right. Me and my brother, my family, and obviously my folks and my sister, we grew up in Stafford. So it's very much split between sort of 50% Wolves, 50% Stoke, but in that neck of the woods. Yeah, which was always fun when you're losing 4-2 and Ricardo Pulisic scored the ball. so we would always, I think 1 o'clock was our sort of our tee off time in terms of having to leave Stafford, because it was a good half hour drive, get through Penkridge, maybe stop with some chips on the way and fish and chips, and then pull up £3 program, read it front to back, and then just sit and wait while everyone filtered in. Those are the days.
I was going to say, I find it interesting sort of how, I guess, match day routines change over time. But I guess sort of before we develop on further, I think for a lot of the time, our values in the club are sort of forged at a young age as well. And that can sort of be through quite a few different things, whether it's, seeing things on the pitch, but also off the pitch, or like little tidbits that just sort of set in your mind what a football club can be in a way. I'm very much leading this, but one of the early ones for me is I went to it was like they did a Wolves Christmas party for the young supporters, and I remember seeing some of the players there, and I like dressed up as like Santa or whatever, and me going, even at the time, going like, this isn't their day job, but they're doing this. I think that's pretty cool. And it kind of when sort of we're communicating about this, it sort of really sort of pulled into focus about, I guess, what a football club can mean to you and what they can actually, give to a community and their social values.
Yeah, no, I agree. We had, obviously, Wolves in the community was a big thing as well, because our school used to do a lot of the soccer Saturday events and during the summers and things. And I remember quite early on, I won a penalty shootout, not something I'm particularly renowned for in my footballing career, but I won a penalty shootout and got signed football. Don't ask me where it is now or even who. I don't even know what year it was, so who knows who signed it? Probably Glenn Hoddle. In terms of that sense of community, it's massive. I think they always have done, haven't they? Even as far reaches as Stafford.
Yeah, I was going to say stretching a ball into the ST postcodes. As I say, another interesting one was you'd mentioned to me previously about meeting some of the players when you were a lot younger as well.
Yeah. So actually, when I was about 8 years old, and this it's kind of a long story, but this kind of feeds into one of the reasons I really wanted to come on the podcast. So when I was 8 years old, so it was probably about 1997, I had open heart surgery at Birmingham Children's Hospital. And one of the things, obviously, it was quite a serious operation, so it's a particularly trying time for the family. But Wolves reached out and arranged a day for me and my entire family to go and visit Molineux. So we had a tour, we met some of the players, the likes of Keith Curl, very young, Robbie Keane, Neil Emblem, who else? The ever delicate Kevin Muscat. Just to name a few. So the manager was actually Colin Lee at the time. But it was actually the late, very special lady, that's Rachel Hayho Flynn, actually showed us around as well. So she pretty much adopted us on the day. She was, full of cuddles and just reassuring the whole family, because obviously it's quite an overwhelming thing to be stood, but so close to the pitch and seeing all the players coming around us. And no, it's just such a special day. And it kind of gets back to what you were saying in terms of having reaching out to the local community and doing things for the fans. So that was such a special day.
I was going to say, I think if I met Kevin Muscat at a young age, I think... I always think I wouldn't want to ever be sick again. Legitimately scare me into being fit.
One of the resounding impacts of that, it was a very serious stare. We're talking an eight-year-old boy who's just had open heart surgery, and I remember one of the staff pretty much having to like pull him over and say, can you just come over here, can you just have a photo with this little boy? And the almost not contempt, but very much this is 30 seconds, I'll never get back. But I think Mike Stowell as well was in goal at the time. And like I say, 8 years old, Mike Stowell's an absolute giant. He put his bare hands on my shoulders to take the photo, and very overwhelming. But no, there was quite a few big characters that day. They were brilliant.
I can imagine. I guess sort of moving forward then, going into, almost sort of teenage years, early adult stages, how did your match day routine change? Because I find it interesting that a lot of people we've had on who go to games regularly are very much, I guess, within a short journey to the ground. I mean, people would say I live far away from the ground, and I've lived in Codsall, so about 5 miles, and that seems quite far. So I mean, and don't get me wrong, Stafford's not exactly a million miles down the road, but
it's far enough it's far away enough when your dad occasionally forgets the season ticket and has to panically call he'll love me for mentioning this. We're panically meeting our uncle, who weirdly later on also got a season ticket, and we go to games with them quite a lot. But, had to meet them halfway in Penkridge around 2 o'clock, and you're sweating a lot. As I sort of got older, and that's kind of where your memories start to really develop, because sort of pre-2001 for me, I was sort of 10 and younger. You remember a lot of emotions, a lot of noise, but you don't really remember specific moments. But I think as I was sort of getting older, you remember specific games. You remember being indoctrinated into loving Doritos for as long as we were sponsored by them. That was sort of a match day tradition. But as soon as we were old enough as well, traditions turned into things like going to the goalpost for a few beers before the game, or a few cokes, obviously, if you're of a certain age. But then grabbing a Mr. Sizzle, and then almost as the years gone on as well, going to the Style. Cheese and onion bats, some chips and all that. Watching the usually watching the early kickoff, the lunchtime Premier League kickoff. But those are those.
No, I was going to say we could. I'm almost debating whether to do a whole podcast on pubs to go to before the game, and the Style comes up more often than not as a proper pre-match drinking pub.
Yeah, it's perfect. Have you been to the Style for pre-match?
Yeah.
And you pretty much see sort of five or six of them queuing up, just waiting. It's perfect, because, I mean, if you're sort of in between beers, then you're certainly not sobering up or losing any of the match day.
and it's got that perfect almost walk to the ground as well. It's hidden, unlike, let's say, the goalpost or whatever it's now called, which is...
Yeah. Or something.
Yeah. I drove past the other day. I really should know it. But it almost seems to be a bit hidden, but it's just perfect for those, that hour and a half before a game. Have a few beers. So we'll do the good, the bad, the ugly, the funny now. So what's your favourite memories of supporting Wolves over the years? You know, you can have one of the big ticket ones, you can have something more personal, or anything in between. Yeah.
So, I mean, the obvious one, I think, for most certain people of a certain generation, to be honest, every generation, is probably Cardiff Millennium Stadium 2003. Yeah. I would imagine that's in everyone's sort of top three. For me, what's a particularly special year was the 2006-2007 season. With Mick McCarthy, simply because that seemed to be the year that we seemed to play the Albion about 7-8 times. It seemed to be every third or fourth week we were playing. And they would usually score at least 3 against us as well. So it's the sort of the era of Diamante, Kamara, Kumas, Kevin Phillips, who's been to Molineux and done quite well for himself more than once or twice. But I think my favourite game, one of my favourite moments was do you remember the Jay Bothroyd goal?
Yes. Yeah,
because he, simply because of the nature of the game, obviously Black Country Derby, there was a lot riding on it because momentum, and we were sort of pushing towards that top six. But we were in the family enclosure at that time. So we started off with 3 season tickets, and we sat in the Billy Quiet, obviously family enclosure at the front. I think my parents, actually, who have now keeping the tickets warm for us, are now in the North Bank. I think they've been there sort of 6-7 years. But this particular game, it was when Bothroyd got the ball, 83rd minute. I could tell you the degrees of the weather that day. It's ingrained. But when he put it in the bottom corner, he then ran over to the family enclosure. And I think it's one of the rare moments I've sort of lost it as a fan and just piled forward, you know, knocking all the toddlers and the kids out the way and running forward to sort of jump into the players. And there's there was a photo in the Express and Star, black and white picture. And I remember you could see my face wasn't a particularly attractive look, I'll be honest, but it was sort of very much Elephant Man screaming into Bothroyd's face. But I ended up cutting that out and sticking it on my homework planner at school. I'd have to put it long gone in the bin somewhere, but yeah, big moment. There's other games as well that you have, like the Oakwell Barnsley 1-1. I think that's secured. It was almost like a pitch invasion every 10 seconds. What else? There's a game, Doncaster away, Neil Collins scored with about last 10 minutes to go. It was around Christmas as well, so it was a very festive. I just remember there being a conga. There was a good 2,000 people strong. But yeah, I mean, we've had a few, haven't we? Well, another one was Derby. I think we won 3-2 away. And I just remember Marlon Harewood, a player who we featured two or three times for us. But him and Andy Keogh just played an absolute blinder. But yeah, you have moments that you just sort of stick with you a bit more, don't you?
No, I think it's interesting that a lot of the moments you've picked are moments, so to speak, and you know, it's very, you know, don't get me wrong, playoff final, playing in Europa League, and even, you know, some of the cup games we've had recently, usually stick into people's minds. But all of those ones I find really interesting because they're all, well, I was going to say the Derby one in particular, because that was almost the moment, that was not, it wasn't the moment we secured promotion to the Premier League in McCarthy, but it was the game before. It's all sealed it, and I think we just needed to beat QPR from memory. And,
Even you know, Blake's good, I think.
Wonder. Yeah, and you know, so it's always interesting that it's players it brings up, and especially that season. You know, we had the Golden Boot winner in Ebanks Blake. We had Michael Kightley, I think, was he didn't quite win Player of the Year. You know, we had some really fantastic players, but yeah, but the first player who springs to your mind in that is Marlon Harewood. And it's the same for so many people. It doesn't quite feel right in a way. And last minute winners, it's an absolute, I think, a staple. Because in theory, by its very definition, like a winner, a game that has a last minute winner, isn't probably that great if it's a 1-0 game. Because what sort of happened for the rest of the 90? If it's like a, you know, a 4-3, 3-2, then yeah. But that was a 1-0 game where the centre-back scored the only goal of the game.
I think quite late down as well, sort of 81st minute as well.
It very late goal. So you couldn't tell you anything else about what happened in that game.
No, it was freezing. I remember it being really cold.
But I can tell you, it was a fantastic header. I can picture the goal. Which I find sort of really endearing for it. And
Neil Collins, what a player.
And those are the moments I think, you know, obviously the ones which stick to you. I was going to say, sort of going from, I guess, sort of fond memories, we'll go to sort of, I guess, some of the low points first, and then we'll go on to sort of any sort of extra ones that stand out for yourselves. Have you got any ones which really kind of, I wouldn't say question, question your supportership, but have really kind of just knocked you for six?
Again, I'm going to be really boring with this one. I think the only time, because for me, like, football's football. Like, you're going to have the high moments, and I think as you get older, you start to appreciate the high moments are incredible, and you just try and manage the low moments, so to speak, as you get older. You start to have a word with yourself. So I think it's the priorities. Come on, you can't ruin your weekend because Wolves got stomped on a Friday night.
you haven't seen my Twitter feed.
So I think the most obvious one, and I think it's because of the sort of ramifications was probably, if you remember, Brighton after the double relegation.
Yeah.
Just because it just felt like it was very splintered. Like, we're as Wolves fans, we've seen it all. We've been hammered, whether it's Southampton battering us 6-0. Even this season, we've been turned over a few times, 4-0, West Ham and the rest, Burnley, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And it's part and parcel of being a Wolves fan. But I think that day was, it just felt very different. We just, it, the club just felt very fractured. I mean, the perfect symbolism was the fan, when the fans were running on the pitch and one of the fans put his foot through one of the advertising boards and just kicked it. I mean, I was like, that's a perfect metaphor for sort of how, where the club is at the moment. And I think, was it the bomb squad? There were some of them. So Roger Johnson, obviously, they've got a bit of a poor rap as the season went on. The likes of Jamie O'Hara, whatever went before, just by that point of the season, it all just felt very tainted. Even players who were just on a big salary from the Premier League years, all just kind of got lumped together. And it was just a very sour taste, I think, around the place at that time. So it was, I think it, rather than it being a particular game or result, although that wasn't a great result, because I think we kind of pinned a lot of hopes on that. We spent a few weeks leading up to it thinking, well, all we need to do is win. But then if you spend 2 years going back-to-back relegations and suddenly expect to win a game, it's just not really how it works, is it? So, I think that's probably a particular point.
Yeah, it does sort of put into perspective the level of toxicity around the club, because say there was a pitch invasion at Brighton away when we got relegated. There was one a couple of weeks before at Molineux when we lost to Burnley as well. And that felt nasty.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not exactly edifying to have pitch invasions when your team's just a bit poor. And, you know, it is almost symbolised in, you know, those players who were on, you know, high wages and weren't delivering. And that always feels like a really big sticking point for particularly Wolves fans.
In
terms of, I guess, earning your wage and just trying hard. Like, you know, I've always said, like, you know, people sort of talk about, you know, let's say like the West Ham way or Newcastle way, and you know, oh, it needs to be a certain type of player, and it's usually a bit of BS. But I think for Wolves, in terms of like an identity, we just want players who try and show that they want it a lot of the time and just don't go hiding.
Well, you consider players that in the past who, there's a player who, even on the podcast, I love it because his name constantly comes up. I think it's Little Dan who mentions him, but it's Dave Edwards, and he's never going to sign for Real Madrid or Barcelona, you know, with respect, but that kind of player, it just typifies the qualities that Wolves love in a player, just a grafter. I mean, if you're in the right places and you're putting yourself about and you're doing your, to use what Will McCarthy say, putting in a shift, then you're going to win the hearts of the Wolves fans. They're going to love you. They're going to sing songs about you. Even the song about Jody Craddock, if ever a song summed up a sort of a hero in the stands, used to be all right, or it used to be something else. But that they're the kind of players, like you say, that kind of win a place in the Wolves fans' hearts.
Yeah, I think that always stands out for me as something I think I'd be interested to know sort of if other clubs have sort of a similar philosophy. But I know for a lot of fans, unless you are a real talent, yeah, and you can get away with it, but I don't think Wolves have really ever played at a level where you can't get away with it, to be fair.
Yeah.
I was going to say, so speaking of players then, who are your favourites? You know, say you can have them from literally at any point over the last sort of 20-odd years or so.
Yeah, I'll reel off a few who I've had a bit of a soft spot for. So I think early doors, Keith Curl. I fancy myself as a bit of a diehard centre-back, Terry Butcher. I mean, if I got a cut, I'd be crying for days. But I mean, I fancy myself as a decent centre-back and then moved out to the right-back. But that sort of defensive mentality meant that Keith Curl, very early days, was one of the first names that I'd be looking for on the team sheet. And again, that kind of carried on to Jody Craddock, even into my teenage years, loving, heartbroken when he went on loan to Stoke, but then came back. Like I say, Stafford, sort of half Wolves, half Stoke. So when he came back to Wolves, delighted, you know, save him from that lot. But then moving on, I was a big fan of Andy Keogh. When they first arrived, obviously we got him from Scunthorpe after he'd been brilliant with Billy Sharp. What was his nickname? The Assist King. I think you talk about these kind of players as well who just really hard worker, really talented player, very selfless as well. So he often got a lot of stick because the goals, I mean, his goal tellies each year weren't incredible. But I was always a big fan whenever whether he was playing with Stephen Ward in the early days when he first arrived from Bohemians, and then helping out and starting to play alongside Sylvain Ebanks-Blake. But I think in recent years, since the sort of Nuno revolution, I think probably I was leaning. It's hard to pick a player from this year, if I'm honest. It's not going to be, you know, Willian Jose. But I was absolutely massive fan of Neves. So particularly in his first year, where it just felt like the shackles were off slightly. He was slightly more further advanced, and he seemed to enjoy the play a bit more. I think I heard in one of the podcasts recently, they were talking about how he's just doing a lot more of the legwork. So he's doing a lot more plugging gaps and very defensive positions, sort of whoever he's playing alongside. So I think his game has had to adapt this year and last year. But I just think I was, for the first year or two when we had Neves, I had him odds on to be a Galactico. In a similar vein where Jota's gone on to Liverpool, etc., and is, you know, be playing Champions League or has been. I had Neves pegged in a similar fashion. I mean, it's not too late, but I think he's certainly adapted his game slightly, so it's a bit more defensive. But so I think they're probably the names that stand out. Jody Craddock was a big one. I think he's probably the only player I think I've had a player's name on the back of my shirt. That's all
okay.
The early
times
in those days. But yeah.
No, there's some good names in there. I think definitely I like the Rakeev Curlan and Jody Caddock shouts. And I think Neves is an interesting one because I think for a lot of people, he was so, so good in the Championship.
Yeah.
And I think he's someone who has almost exemplified that step up between Championship and Premier League as a midfielder. But you see it a lot in strikers that, you know, you can Ebanks-Blake, for example, you know, scored for fun for two seasons in the Championship and then plays in the Premier League and really struggles. Mm. But Neves is obviously a different caliber of player to Ebanks-Blake. And he was just a Rolls Royce in that division. He would be able to get the time and space just to pass, you know, pass his way through a game and just rake 50 yards, and it just not, yeah, so it just didn't even seem to trouble him.
Well, he'd be walking up at the end of the game, barely broke a sweat.
Yeah, and it's like, how's he managing to do this, you know? Then he either wasn't getting afforded for space and the privilege of time on board when he was in the Premier League, and the defenders were a bit better as well in terms of plugging in those little gaps where that level below wouldn't. And, you know, I guess it's interesting that when he was at Porto, he was very much described as a defensive midfielder, deep lying playmaker. And you look at his stats this season and, you know, he's one of a few players, you know, I think he like leads in terms of tackles and interceptions across the league or something silly. Like his defensive work rate is really strong. But I think because we've seen he has this side to his game that is, I guess, a lot more visually appealing as well. And his tackles aren't exactly blockbuster. He's not like, you know, it's not like a Paul Hinton tackle where he's going to cling through everything and really stamp his authority a lot of the time. And, you know, I'm glad he hasn't moved. Don't get me wrong, as I'm sure you are too. But it's interesting that his career, to a degree, at that point, has stalled because
stagnated slightly.
Yeah, and you know, he's been one of our better players by and large this season, which isn't saying much. Don't get me wrong, but you know, it'll be interesting to sort of see if he can push on next season.
Because I
think, you know, most Wolves fans are very realistic in terms of what his career trajectory is and probably what, you know, Jorge Mendes has sold him in terms of his career path, like he's done with Jota. And, you know, fair play for Jota to, you know, taking that big next step and doing very well with it. My next sort of point, we sort of kind of move on. We've talked about players a bit. We've talked about, I guess, the memory. So what one thing that sticks out to me is a lot of time is a lot of the people we've had on stories from the pack so far have almost been, I guess, sort of very much switched on Wolves fans their entire life and been very much on going to games every week and say living in and around the area, but that's not always been the case for you, has it?
No, to be fair, so I had a season ticket until I was sort of 18. So we had the three in the South Bank, and then it went down to two. So my dad's kind of, it has now been going for a while with my mom, but for a while it was rotated sort of between me, my brother, sort of anyone who was around. So when I was 18, I went to uni in Lancaster, so up in the northwest, in the sticks near the Lake District. So I didn't really manage to get to a huge amount of home games, but just as luck would have it, I went to uni with a lot of Bolton fans, Burnley fans, Man City fans, United fans, etc. Blackpool as well at that time, sort of up there, Blackburn as well. So it's all the almost the B teams from around the Greater Manchester area. So I was still able to go to a fair amount. So I think in my first year at uni, I sort of went to sort of 15 or so away games in that local area. But it's interesting, like you say, because it doesn't necessarily matter where you end up. You almost find similar like-minded people. And Wolves fans are like, we're like cockroaches, aren't we? We always pop up. It doesn't matter where you go in the world, you always meet another Wolves fan.
No, I completely agree. I know I went off to university. I went to Aberystwyth and ended up living with someone who grew up a mile down the road from me and was a big Wolves fan. And then, I mean, Aberystwyth is just an exile for West Midlands anyway. So there's sort of quite a few Wolves fans knocking about, to be fair anyway.
I remember going on a few school trips to the dunes, the sand dunes there. Not really doing a lot, if I'm honest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't feel sorry for you having to sort of do a school trip there. So talk to me about Hong Kong. Because, again, that we were, 120 miles or whatever away when we both went off to university support of the team. Different supporting a team overseas, I guess.
Yeah, massively. So when I first went over there, I kind of, there's obviously a huge expat community, and there's certain areas in Hong Kong where expats sort of gravitate towards, and there's a lot of pubs with the names sort of, you know, Churchill's, Misty's, Queen Victoria, the standard sort of British pubs names that you'd expect to find in China. So we actually had, I sort of did a bit of research on Facebook to see if there were any sort of Wolves fans there, community groups, just footballing groups, to be honest, just to see if anyone's around, go for a few beers. And I found that there was a Hong Kong Wolves supporters group. Sent a message to the chairman, as he's called. I'm still in the WhatsApp group, it's hilarious. a lad called Jason. And he replied, was like, yeah, come down, just come watch a few games, see how it goes. And the first game I actually went to watch, I went to watch at a bar called Churchill's, which is in Wan Chai in Hong Kong. It was safe to say it was a late kickoff, I think, because it was sort of, it's about 7 hour time difference. And obviously once you hit the Premier League, the big leagues, fixtures are all over the place in terms of kickoff times. So I turned up, having had one or two sherries, because I didn't really know what to expect. So I thought I'll just turn up, you know, meet one or two people, and we'll just see where it goes. And I went with a mate of mine called Nathan, who he's actually a City fan. I mean, he kept quiet the whole time. I think he just pretended he was a Wolves fan. And it was the 1-1 game against United. So I think it was one of our early goals. Moutinho scored that screamer. The top ends. And and that was what sort of kickstarted it all off. So we've been meeting every other week, usually for home games. Usually when it was a Friday or Saturday. It was being a teacher, it was harder if it was a Sunday evening, although it got roped into one or two. And it was brilliant. We were actually out there for the Hong Kong Sevens, which is when different teams usually send sort of their under-23s team. And so we were over there when Wolves actually, it was the first time they'd entered the team into the Hong Kong Sevens, and led by the mighty Rob Edwards. So it was hilarious. It was a whole weekend. We went on the first day, they competed in one or two miniature trophies. The lads were great. It was the likes of Deion Sanderson, who's ripping it up for Sunderland now. Ed Francis, I think he was the captain. Watt as well, I think. Niall Ennis as well. And obviously, there was sort of, I mean, there were only four or five of us, but we were, safe to say, we were fairly vocal. And we'd adapted the Nuno Had a Dream song to a version of Rob Edwards had a dream. The kid from it was Bad Niall Ennis. I can't remember. Bill, is he from Bilston? It might be Dudley. I'm not sure. But he found it hilarious. Like he because the one of the players came over, and I can't remember which one, and was giving us a bit of a biopic about Niall Ennis to be like, this is where he's from. Use this in the song. I think it might be Sanderson, maybe. So we were like, perfect. Give us more. Give us ammo. And I'm sure I can find. I could maybe ping you over some footage of it. But towards the end of the night, Rob Edwards was just trying to give an interview, and we were still there about 7 or 8 hours later. Hoarse, honestly didn't have a voice for about 3 days after that. It's terrible trying to think.
That's incredible.
It was brilliant. It was so much fun. It was just the fact that, like you say, hundreds of miles away from the Midlands. They probably thought, I think he said something about that as well. It doesn't matter where you go in the world, there's always Wolves fans. But yeah, so no, that was a great weekend. Really good fun.
No, I can imagine. I think it almost brings it back to, I guess, sort of that sort of genuine like community spirit, yeah, of it all. That, you know, as a player coming over to you, I know, like, that development players, however you look at it, but, you know, coming over, saying hello, saying, oh, sing this about my mate. He'll find it funny, give me a good laugh. And, you know, you forget that they're sometimes sort of human too. And, you know, it's almost, you know, the sort of thing you get in like semi-pro level sometimes, I can imagine. And, you know, say to you know, basically have a three-day football drinking session with your mates.
It was a dream. It was incredible. And there were all sorts of other, who else was there? There were some obscure teams. I think West Ham had sent, obviously they've got a good youth program, so they'd sent a decent team, good outfit. Chelsea, I think, had sent a team. There weren't that many. They're the ones that stick out for me, because I think Wolves sort of got to the latter stages. They got to the semi-final of one cup, got knocked out, which meant that they were playing in another cup, which wasn't as good, but it meant they were just battering teams. I think, and it's quite funny as well, because I don't know if you've ever been to sort of South China area, but when it was sort of, I can't remember when it was about May time, but it was boiling hot. The humidity was sort of 70% or something ridiculous. So they had to have like a, like a knockout, like a, what's it called? Like a sudden death. Because I think it was 0-0 after 20 minutes or whatever the time was. So you went from having 7 players to just 4. So it was essentially just watching Wolves players have a kickabout in the park with their mates. So yeah, it was hilarious. It was great. And like I say, they were good. The lads were great, the Wolves players. They came over, had pictures with us, and were just chatting for ages. And there were a couple of the guys who were from the Hong Kong Wolves Supporters Club. Actually, they had young lads with them as well that weekend. So it was quite funny to watch, because they were a little bit having their, you know, getting autographs and getting the fanboy mode. But it was useful as well, because then when I came home for Christmas, once or twice actually. So when Liverpool won the league and we lost 2-0 to Liverpool, Van Dijk scored the second goal off a free kick, I think, the home game. Even I was in Hong Kong at the time, we came home for Christmas, and then me and my brother, my parents, very luckily allowed us to use the season tickets. But because, I don't know if you know, there's an international fans lounge. I think it used to be the players lounge. And we went in there. So we went in there the first time, and Bully was in there. And me and my brother arrived late. We were frantically... So that's just slightly distracted. We saw Kevin Kilbane in the train station. Had a quick photo with him, and then linked it to the Molyneux. It's bizarre where your mind takes you. And then because we arrived late, both of us looking like morons in our, you know, Wolves Christmas hats. Because we arrived late, we were stood by the door. And Bully, in, you know, true Bully fashion, the room was captivated by one of his stories. And then he came over, and as he was leaving, because we were stood by the door, we were like, a quick picture, Bully. And he was brilliant. And then the second time we went, we actually saw Robbie Dennison, and my dad was with us. And it was brilliant, because my dad, obviously, a massive fan of Dennison, sort of, I think it was 80s, he was playing for the Wolves. And watching him almost turn into a bit of a fanboy, and he was showing Dennison a video of one of his older goals. But no, it was great. So even the opportunity of Hong Kong gave us, you know, those moments as well when we were back at Molyneux.
So that's incredible. So it's fascinating sometimes where supporting a team you know, supporting Wolves can get you, I guess. But you say, even though, you know, it's taking you halfway across the world and back again, but, you know, you've taken that with you, I guess. Sort of second to last thing, it's not the most fun subject at the moment, but Wolves this season, how are you finding them? I guess, you know, we're right at the end of the campaign now. Are you sort of able to view the season as a whole, or are you sort of looking at it as a bit of not a microcosm, so to speak, but how are you sort of finding it?
It's funny, you know, because I think after the last couple of sort of 2 or 3 years, I think we've been slightly spoiled. It's safe to say Wolves fans, we like to think we've got perspective. We like to think that, you know, we talk about the games surely, and we've been in the doldrums. We're League One 6, 7 years ago. But it's inevitable that your expectation grows the more successful you are, so the higher you go. It's hard for me because I was listening to another podcast. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to name rival podcasts.
Don't bother. That's the easiest.
It was another podcast, and they were talking about they were reviewing Wolves and Everton seasons. Just generally, it was like a very quick chat, and they were almost like, well, it's a bit odd because 12th in the league isn't necessarily a failure for a team that isn't almost self-prescribed top big six. So, but I don't think necessarily the position is what we consider. We have to just think about where we are in terms of our progress. We've been unlucky with injuries. So the likes of Jimenez, I think Bolly, Neves, Martino, at different stages, they've either they had long COVID or they've been self-isolating, or it's something to do with COVID. Johnny's been out for the majority of the season. Other players have stepped up, so there are positive signs. I think we kind of have to try and chalk this one off as a transition year, as much as I hate that phrase, transition, because, you know, what you're paying your money for this season if it's a transition season. But I think it's going to be a big summer. It's going to be a big summer for Nuno. It'll be interesting to see what we do with Vitinha and Aitnori, whether we sign those, because I think they're big money moves, whether it's sort of 18, 19 million, I think, for Aitnori and... But I think there are positive signs. I think we've given the youth some opportunities as well in the last couple of weeks, which I think for some of them has paid off. They're not necessarily proving to be world beaters, but I mean, the experience can only be positive for them. It'll be interesting to see what happens, because I think with Jose Willian, I can imagine he'll go back to Sociedad. I can't imagine we'll sign him. I mean, I'd be surprised if we did, but I mean, as Wolves fans, we've had bigger shocks. I think, yeah. So going forward, I think we need 4 or 5 big signings to really push on again. Otherwise, we do run the risk of just becoming a mid-table Premier League team. Now, there are worse things to be, but I think it's not necessarily in Fosun's long-term plan for where Wolves will be. I think also in terms of keeping Nuno and keeping him motivated and interested, I think that needs to be the next step. So we'll see what happens in the summer. I think Jorge Mendes, I think he owes us one after the last summer, after stealing some of the top assists and goals and then giving us some, well, I'm not necessarily saying it's selling us duds, but I wouldn't say they were quite in the caliber of the players that left. It's probably the polite way to put it.
No, I completely agree. And you said, I agree with sort of a large amount of what you said in terms of the season as a whole, and sort of, I guess, sort of how you need to look at it sometimes. And we're all guilty of being prisoners for the moment, especially after we lose. And I think, yeah, what you said about, you know, the difference between finishing 8th and 12th, there are a lot of teams competing for those spots in a way. And, you know, I don't think it's a coincidence in a way that we didn't necessarily push on to a degree that we needed to, whereas the likes of Villa did, and almost our positions, you know, they've improved a lot, and we've not, you know, we've declined a little bit, and teams like that have overtaken us. Everton have as well.
Yeah, and Leeds.
And you know, it could very easily turn next season with a couple of signings or just, you know, just general football improvements from Wolves, or decreases from other teams finding their level, so to speak, or, you know, not quite adapting and overcoming challenges, which I think has been Wolves' biggest thing this season. So, you know, I just want this, I quite want the season to end. You know, there's a whole thing about Nuno. If we give him the summer, we've got to back him. And I think that's sort of pretty much everyone's sort of viewpoint, is that he needs backing. He's probably built up just about enough goodwill to kind of give him a summer, but then, you know, there's a large amount of accountability going forwards.
It's been a bizarre season, because we started off, was it the first, I think pretty much until Jimenez got the injury at Arsenal. Yeah, it was like our best start to a Premier League season ever. And yet was it the end of January, February time, we were also talking a lot about looking over our shoulder. So we were looking down the league. So it has been, it's been a bizarre season at times. And I think we're kind of where I would have expected us to be with the players that we've got, because we're not particularly prominent in front of net. As much as Silva, you know, there's flashes of brilliance and the signs of what he can become. I think we've said it all season long, haven't we? He's just a bit too young to be almost having that pressure, having that weight on his shoulders. I just don't think he's quite ready yet. But, you know, he has bulked out as the year's gone on. He's gotten better. And I think the experience and the time that he's had on the pitch will certainly work in his favour. Same with Aignore.
Yeah, 1,000%. You know, it's been a little bit of it's been very much a baptism of fire. To be honest, Silva and Aignore, the intention wasn't necessary to play them week in, week out. And that's kind of how it's had to happen. But it's happened, A, through injury, but B, their own form, especially Aignore. You know, it was a shame he didn't play against Spurs, but actually he'd been quietly one of a really consistent performer the last few weeks. And, you know, fingers crossed, so that those young players continue to push on as well, because that's a big key ingredient for us. That if all of our younger players, even someone like Gibbs White, who's 20, 21 now, if he can continue to push on, it means we don't have to worry about getting as many players, because that means a disruption into the squad, but they just need to keep raising their games to be, you know, one of the top, you know, to be a top 10 team. But we'll see. To wrap up, Tom, we've kind of gone over, I guess, you know, life, football and everything in between. So to sum up, what does being a Walsam mean to you?
One of the things I wanted to quickly say, if that's all right, is one of the big reasons I wanted to come on here was almost to say a massive thank you to the Wolves community. Because I think what I'm about to say is kind of what being a Wolves fan means for me. So as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, when I was 8, I had open heart surgery at Birmingham Children's Hospital. And as I sort of got older, a big thing I really wanted to do was almost try and repay a bit of what they were able to do for me and my family. So I ran the London Marathon in 2017, and through various, you know, social media platforms and trying to just spread the word and drum up interest as much as possible. One of the things I did was get in touch with a lot of the Wolves groups, so the Facebook group, Instagram, etc., and just said, this is my Just Giving page. Can I be cheeky? Would you mind sticking a little... almost a biopic, a little profile, and just get it out there and just see if anyone would like to contribute. Because it's all, you know, I imagine a lot of people sort of West Midlands, Black Country area at some point or another will, you know, use the services of Birmingham Children's Hospital. Or we know people who've needed that, because obviously the work they do is just incredible. And eventually, but the grand total was sort of £4,000. And which was incredible, really, honestly, the local support, the community effort, not just from sort of my friends, family, and other people who we got involved in various fundraising efforts, but also Wolves fans. So I would say that sort of somewhere between £150 and £200 were donated by Wolves fans. So these people I never necessarily meet. I could walk past them at the next, you know, whether it's Manchester United or next season, I could walk past them and I'll never know that these are the people who sort of chipped in £5, £10, £20 here and there to sort of contribute towards that effort. So I kind of want to use this as an opportunity for the listeners as well. If anyone did donate, just to say a massive thank you to them as well. And it's 4 years overdue, but it's still, you know, better late than never. But to sort of answer your question, that is what it means to me. Whether it's through the memories I have when I was younger, going to those early games, going to the Wolves with my family is very much a staple part of your Saturday afternoon. It's something that you look forward to. I think my dad talks about a book when Saturday comes. And it's very much about the essence of that. It's being a central part of the local community. And I think that ties in quite nicely with my sort of fundraising efforts where I was able to, you know, give something back. And yeah, so it's just a really good opportunity just to say a massive thank you to the Wolves fans.
No, I think that's really fantastic. And, you know, I think I did one of these with Louise and Chris Cold, and we talked about charity on there before. And I'd like to think all football clubs and all sort of supporter groups are similar with this, and we carve in a bit of an echo chamber with Wolves fans. But whenever there is a charity CSR drive, Wolves fans usually step up for it.
Yeah, funny story actually, we commissioned Louise to do a painting. So from one of my mum's, I think it was a significant birthday. I won't name and shame it on here. But we commissioned Louise to do a painting of her and my niece. And it's a fantastic work. What a talented artist. But again, it all feeds in, doesn't it? It's a small world.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, it can't end it on a Birmingham Children's Hospital, I think, because, you know, that they do incredible work. And, you know, I think even in the fan cast, you know, we've had guys on here who've, Hoops and David Evans, I think, both mentioned on the podcast previously that, their children had to use it. I think, again, Hoops, I was going to say he's no longer with us. That sounds really bad. he is still alive.
I don't think it worked then, whatever they did.
If you are listening, I'm sorry. But, you know, he stepped back from podcasting duties this year. I know he's raised money for from before. I think he did. It might have been Birmingham Half Marathon, I think. And again, just, he talked about on the show for fans, the work that they've been doing for his little one. And, you know, obviously we shared out the link on Fancast socials, and, you know, you get people who never met in a million years and never probably will meet, but understand the significance, especially within the region as well. And, you know, we've seen it a few times in the last 12 months, I think, which is, you know, a real testament to Wolves as a club and Wolves fans as supporters.
Yeah, it's kind of what you said though about shared experience, because I think I heard somebody's story on here where they were talking about they're talking about the style, and he was talking about the sort of the alleyways as you walk into the Molyneux, you see it in the distance, and it's like you say, it's there are thousands of people who know the names of the same pubs who will, you know, they'll park at the Science Park or they'll park on the Asda cheekily for an hour or two, and it's kind of that shared experience, isn't it? There's literally in excess of 20, 25, 30,000 people who all have that same experience on the same day. And even just like me and you talking, we're talking about the same goals, same games, same memories and same moments. That's just, quite a magical group.
No, definitely. And if we say it like that, it's sort of bonkers that you'll do things like this. So, I've drank him with Stalin. I also have two. And transfers and you never meet. And it's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy. But no, I think that's a really nice note to sort of round up on in terms of our shared experiences, which is what Stories from the Pack and I guess sort of being a fan's all about. So, Tom, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been
absolute
great. It's been great learning a bit more about, I say, your life, which I say seems to have taken down some very interesting paths.
Yeah, that's safe to say. Interesting people, for sure.
Fantastic. All right, thanks very much. And, excellent. We'll hope, I was going to say enjoy the rest of the season, but I guess for us it's going to be enjoy the pre-season and look forward to next season, isn't it?
Excellent.